The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says talks with Ukraine over a deal to end the Russia-Ukraine war were productive, but there is more work to be done. The talks were held in Florida and were attended by a Ukrainian delegation led by National Security Council Secretary Rustem Umerov, who is Ukraine's new chief negotiator. Also at yesterday's meeting on the other side, President Donald Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff and Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, with Mr. Witkoff expected to travel to Moscow today ahead of expected talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow. I'm joined now by the host of The Rest is Politics and former Downing Street Director of Communications and Strategy for Tony Blair, Alistair Campbell. Alistair, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, what do you make of the meeting yesterday? I mean, I was perplexed by the presence of Jared Kushner. What the hell has he got to do? He has no official rank. And Steve Witkoff, well, he knows little enough, it seems, about international diplomacy, but at least I can understand why he was there with Rubio.
Well, it's interesting. When they met the Ukrainian delegation last time, hardly anybody seemed to notice that Kushner was at that one. There was a wide angle shot. Yesterday it was obvious because Kushner was on one side of Rubio and Witkoff was on the other. But in the previous meeting, Kushner was there on the left. And look, I think the honest answer to your question is revealed by that. I don't know if you saw the remarkable piece in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend, really detailing the extent to which a lot of this so-called 28-point plan, which is less of a plan, more of a wish list, the extent to which the Russian negotiator and Witkoff and Kushner have been meeting over months and organising meetings between different business and economic players on either side. And I think what the Europeans are maybe waking up to is that this, for Trump's administration, is as much about American business deals as it is about bringing peace.
Now, just as you did with Rory Stewart on The Rest is Politics, on this program we went through the 28-point plan, which has now been modified according to Rubio and the Ukrainian side. But it was so much about money, so much. We will give you a security guarantee, but we have to be compensated. You put $100 billion in and we'll take half of it. It's, you know, they put nothing in and want everything out.
Well, I'm glad that you did go through it, Pat, because when we went through it on the podcast, literally point by point, and I had messages, including from MPs and including from one member of the British government, who said they had no idea that that was at the heart of the plan. If you actually go through the plan, the most detailed parts of the American plan, the 28-point so-called plan, were actually about money. And this thing, basically, it was like a sort of, somebody said it was like a mafia shakedown. You basically, you know, we put in nothing, we get 50% of all the profits. There's this ongoing row about, you know, the frozen assets that are sitting in Brussels, and the Belgian prime minister's worried about the sort of legalities and so forth. But essentially, what the Americans are saying is that should come to us and the Russians. And I just think we've got to face up to the fact that even when I listen to your news bulletin, you know, we talk about it like Rubio says this, Trump says this, and we treat them as kind of normal politicians saying normal things. But actually, there's something deeply abnormal going on in the background. And we saw the same with what happened in Gaza. If you go back to what happened with Trump pursuing, calling it a peace deal. Now, okay, fewer people have been killed since the so-called peace deal in Gaza, where he went there and stood in front of that gigantic, gigantic Peace 2025 sign. And it's as if that's now all done. Over 300 Palestinians have been killed since then. Mm. Now, with this one, are they trying to do the same thing of getting to a place where they can say they've delivered something, whereas in fact, the fighting goes on, but meanwhile, they're making all these business deals?
It's, I suppose, the colour of the Trump regime at the moment that it is always illuminated by the quest for cash. I'm not sure if you saw that. Well, I'm sure you talked about it on the podcast at some point, the pardoning of the Honduran former president.
Absolutely.
Took 10
Incredible.
Years to convict him in American courts, and with the stroke of a pen, Trump pardons this guy.
Well, he says he hasn't pardoned him yet, as I understand it. He says he's going to. And of course, what's happening is it's happening at the time of the elections in Honduras. So just, you know, for your listeners who haven't not aware of this. I mean, Honduras is not one of those countries that gets massive attention around the world. But this is their former president who is serving a 45-year jail sentence in America for drug running, essentially for turning Honduras into a narco state where hundreds of tons of cocaine were flooding into the United States. So he goes through the American legal system, he gets sentenced to 45 years. Meanwhile, there's an election going on, and Trump wants this guy's successor, who's a kind of right-wing Trumpian populist, wants him to win. So he drops in, literally in the last week of the campaign, he drops in that he's going to pardon the guy, and Honduras is going to get nothing unless they choose the guy that he wants. He did the same in relation to the Argentinian elections not long ago. And this is what I mean about abnormal behavior. It used to be, okay, let's, you know, we're all grown up and we know that the CIA and others have interfered in elections, but to do it so blatantly is, and to do it alongside, because the other thing that's incredible about this is happening. He wants to pardon a convicted narco state leader at a time when he's also dropping bombs on Venezuelan boats because he says that Venezuela is flooding America with drugs.
Now, I wanted to come.
Double standard is amazing.
I wanted to come to that. We will return to the Ukraine and the prospects of some sort of a deal in a moment or two. But that question of Venezuela and his battle against the narco terrorists, as he would put it, and Hegseth, he's under some pressure now for the order that he gave when they struck a boat and presumably destroyed its cargo and maybe killed a couple of people on board. But when it turned out that some people were surviving, Hegseth's order was kill them all. And this looks like a clear case of an extrajudicial killing, which would put Hegseth presumably in the crosshairs of a normal judicial system.
Well, you'd say so, but this is what I mean about you use the word normal. These are all abnormal acts. These are, you know, you even have Marjorie Taylor Greene, or Marjorie Traitor Greene, as Trump now calls her, talking about, you know, her pointing out that Congress is the only body that can actually declare war. Now, what's happened here is that Trump just keeps pushing the envelope. So you take out a boat, you say without giving any evidence, I haven't seen a single named person that has been killed on these boats. Now, they may well be drug dealers, but even if they are, you do not have the right as one foreign power to go into the territories of another and take out the people. Imagine if this was in Dublin. Imagine if they just decided that there's a sort of massive drug ring inside Dublin and they're shipping cocaine and fentanyl or whatever it might be to the United States. Does Trump have the right to come and, you know, blow up parts of Dublin? You know, so that's what he's doing. And there is there's so little pushback from within the American system. It's picking up a bit, but there's very little pushback from other government leaders. And of course, I'm not going to sit here and defend Maduro. He did steal an election. He is a terrible human being. But the fact is, Trump is behaving as though he is entitled to do whatever he wants, however he wants, wherever he wants in the world.
Now, the extraordinary thing is what Trump wrote on Truth Social. To all airlines, pilots, drug dealers, and human traffickers, please consider the airspace above and surrounding Venezuela to be closed in its entirety. In other words, he's saying to every civilian airline who carry normal passengers going about their normal business, you can't fly in and out of Venezuela.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
exactly
imperialism at its most naked.
Well, it's just, it's a sort of form of madness, but because there's no real pushback. And of course, I think that too many leaders have got themselves into a position of, because when Trump came in, they thought, okay, well, you know, most leaders probably didn't want him, but they've got to get on and deal with him. So they all sort of, they pretend that they're dealing with a normal leader. That is utterly abnormal behavior. And by the way, I don't know if you saw his other post yesterday, Pat. I mean, Thanksgiving is meant to be a kind of holiday and a time of celebration in the United States. The tweet that he put out to recognized Thanksgiving was utterly vile. It was essentially saying that anybody who was not born in America didn't deserve to be in America. It was a kind of, it was the flip side of what you've just said about that. You know, all these 53 million Americans who've come to us from mental institutions and all this sort of stuff that he pumps out the whole time. So I just think that until, and it, look, it's a hard call for world leaders to do this, you know, because it, you know, it's very, very tough call to sort of say you've got to come out and call this out. I've noticed the German Chancellor Merz is starting to say a few tough things. Carney in Canada has said a few tough things. But, you know, the truth is we are dealing with an utterly abnormal presidency.
I don't know whether you saw the meme. It's kind of amusing. It's a combination of two pieces of video. And one is Trump angrily saying, if you don't speak English, get out of my country. And then that's followed by Melania totally garbling the English language in a speech she made.
So I know, but this is what's so crazy about the whole thing, is that there's no... You keep thinking there's going to be a logic. I remember we did on the podcast recently, we did a series on Rupert Murdoch, and I quoted this guy who said, the thing about Murdoch is you kept aching to believe that he would keep his promises, okay? And I think with Trump, I think other world leaders keep aching to believe that it's not as bad as they think it is. And I think we've got to reach a point, you know, where we actually understand it is as bad as we think it is.
Now, back to the Ukrainian peace talks, so-called, and the question of the corruption scandal, as Trump put it, about, what was his name, Yermak, who was fired, he resigned and then was fired by Zelensky, and very close to Zelensky. I mean, do you have an understanding of what that was about?
I don't fully understand it. I mean, prior to Zelensky is... I think has emerged as one of the few kind of political heroes in the world at the moment. And I think he gives a lot of people a lot of hope. But Ukraine does have a pretty bad track record when it comes to corruption. And there have been these, there was this attempt that Zelensky's government made to shut down some of the anti-corruption bodies. And the thinking at the time was it was because they were getting quite close to people in Zelensky's inner circle. Now and this guy that we're talking here about, a very, very important figure within the Ukrainian system. Now he's now gone. That I think does leave a bit of a scar on Zelensky's reputation. However, I think when we're talking about corruption, I think Donald Trump is the last person who should be commenting about the corruption of others. But I think, look, there's no getting away from the fact. And likewise, Putin, of course. I mean, Russia is essentially a kind of mafia state. And I think that it is a blow to Zelensky. There's no doubt about that. When's he coming to Dublin, by the way?
Tomorrow.
Excellent. And what's he doing? Is he speaking to the Doyle?
There is talk of him addressing the Doyle and Shannon in some sort of a joint session. That is not clear yet. But he will, I believe, be meeting our new president, President Connolly, who is all for peace and not for war, and criticised Germany for boosting its spending on the military, comparing it to the Nazis in the 30s. Which was an extraordinary thing. So I'm wondering, will there be any kind of meaningful exchange between President Connolly and President Zelensky? Because she would be seen, I suppose, in his eyes as some sort of an appeaser.
Right. Okay. I mean, because it's very interesting, the debate that's happening in Germany right now. There's no doubt that the Germans, I think, are ahead of where British public opinion is in terms of thinking this Ukraine stuff is getting more and more serious. And of course, Tusk in Poland is, they're much, much closer to it. We interviewed the Deputy Prime Minister of Poland recently, who said that so far as we're concerned, we are already at war with Russia, and because Russia is already at war with us. So I think that, that will perhaps not be a meeting of minds, put it that way.
Okay, so in terms of what happened in Florida and the positive noises, slightly positive noises, both from Rubio, as we heard, but then he would say that anyway because it's their plan that's being rewritten, I suppose. But even from the Ukrainian side, they were talking about some progress, and I don't know, because the key issues are those of territory, which Zelensky has pledged never to cede to the Russians, and the size of its military, which would render them vulnerable to subsequent attacks. And who can believe Putin anyway? I remember Sergei Lavrov, the night before the invasion of Ukraine in 2022, actually saying there will be no invasion. This is all nonsense, stuff of nonsense. Within hours, they were across the border.
Well, it goes back even further. If you're Zelensky, you're a Ukrainian sitting there, and you're dealing with big international powers like the United States. Don't forget, Ukraine used to have nuclear weapons, and the Budapest Memorandum, they gave them over to the Russians with guarantees from the US, the UK and Russia that they would never be attacked. Well, that has happened. So I think they're entitled to be a bit sceptical about some of this stuff. I'll tell you what I thought was the most interesting thing yesterday about that meeting in Florida was actually the look on the face of Witkoff and Kushner as Rubio was speaking, because Rubio was much closer there, I thought, in the way he was speaking to the European line on this. Trump is obviously the kind of key decision maker. He's put Witkoff in charge of the negotiations rather than Rubio. But when Rubio was talking about Ukraine being a sovereign, independent state, Witkoff really looked like he just swallowed a fly.
It's point one in the, I think it's point one or two, in the plan, the 28-point plan.
Absolutely in the plan. Yeah, but it's very interesting. In their plan, in the American-Russian plan, they said that they would, that Ukraine's sovereignty would be confirmed. The European rewritten plan said reconfirmed. And never have two letters and a hyphen done so much work, because basically the European version was saying this has never been a question, and it's just the American proposal that made it. And I don't know Witkoff. Jonathan Powell, my friend and former colleague in Downing Street, who's now the National Security Advisor, he actually, speaks pretty highly of him, and I know that that is reciprocated. But you do get the sense that Witkoff is somebody who can't quite believe that he is constantly flitting out and between two of the most powerful people in the world and negotiating between them. And he does seem to have a little... I thought one of the meetings he had with Putin, I thought at one point he's going to get his autograph book out in a minute. He was just so sort of...
He looked like he would bend down and kiss Putin's ring as you would for the Pope, that kind of thing, when he walked into the room.
It felt a little bit like that. It did. It did.
Now, just briefly, I was reading a piece in the New York Times written by a man called Roger Cohen, and from that surname you'd expect that he is probably Jewish. And it's about a visit that he made to Lebanon with the New York Times photographer David Guttenfelder. They were sitting on a cliff above a highway, and they happened to catch the moment when an Israeli drone fired a missile that turned a white car into a ball of fire. So they raced to the scene. They found a driver's seat that had been blown to oblivion. Two distraught young men dressed in black picked up small pieces of charred remains one by one and dropped them into plastic bags to be buried the next day. It's an example of the impunity with which the Israelis decide to kill anybody they tell us is a prospective terrorist. They're attacking in Lebanon. They've attacked in Syria in recent times to the outrage of the new Syrian government. We know about their activities in Lebanon. We know about their activities in Yemen in terms of targeting people at will. And the question of Israel as the imperial power in that region now seems undeniable.
Well, you used the word impunity there, and I think this is what, in a sense, Trump is giving permission to world leaders to behave with impunity. If you think about it, the message that he sends by saying, "I will pardon a guy that America's judicial system has sentenced to 45 years in jail, a former president who was turned Honduras into a narco state," he's basically saying our class, our level of people, those of us at the top of our game in politics, and particularly, well, especially if they are on the same political wavelength and the kind of right-wing wavelength that I'm on, we can do what the hell we want. And the thing about, and you even have, you just take it to the next level. When Trump went to Israel, he said, and he sort of did it in his usual Trumpian way, kind of with a big smile on his face, half in jest, but he turned to the president in front of Netanyahu and said, "Why don't you just give this guy a pardon?" And what happened last week? Netanyahu has now himself asked the Israeli president for a pardon from any convictions, both, past, present, future. Now, that is basically saying impunity. Let's live in a world of impunity. I think the worst thing that's happened since the Gaza peace deal is actually anything that can bring that conflict to an end, we should support. But it's Trump has given the sense that he's brought peace to the region when he hasn't. And so you now have, as you say, things happening like that. I read that piece in the New York Times as well. It was chilling. But you now have that sort of thing happening, which we only read about because, as you say, the New York Times guy happened to be there as it took place. That stuff's happening all the time.
Yeah, we should maybe touch back on Venezuela and what he's at there. I mean, obviously he doesn't like Maduro and what Maduro stands for. But in terms of stealing elections, I don't think, and attempting to usurp the state, I don't think Trump is in any way immune to criticism there. But the dangers, aircraft approaching Venezuelan airspace, are they likely to be intercepted by the Americans? Are they likely to be intercepted by the Venezuelans? What's going to happen there? And will America get sucked into a war without congressional approval?
Well, I mean, and the answer to all of those questions is I don't know, you don't know, we don't know, and I suspect that Trump doesn't know. It feels at the moment like he's just sort of, you know, I used the phrase earlier, pushing the envelope, seeing how far he can push things. Venezuela, let's not forget as well, Venezuela does have a lot of oil, and it could be that that's what's driving his interest. It can't be. The stated goal of all this is to stop the flooding of America with drugs. But if that's the case, how do you square that with what he's just done in relation to Honduras? So, this is what I mean. We're not dealing with normality here. We're dealing with abnormal foreign policy, abnormal domestic policy, and the utterly abnormal running of an American administration whose leader, whose president, seems to think that the norms that have governed the United States through our lifetime no longer exists. Rule of law, international order, they don't exist anymore. That is what he's breaking.
Alistair, thank you very much for joining us. That's Alistair Campbell, co-host with Rory Stewart of The Rest is Politics and former Downing Street Director of Communications and Strategy for Tony Blair.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.